example of a liquor bar which is in Tamoguna, mode of ignorance. So the countryside is in the mode of goodness, Sattvaguna. The cities are in the mode of passion. The liquor bars, brothels and such like are in the mode of ignorance. And the temples of Lord Krishna, they are transcendental, spiritual, beyond these three modes. Foodstuffs are also can also be categorized under the three modes. Vegetables, fruits, fresh items like this are called sattvic because they're healthy, juicy, nourishing. At the other extreme, you have non-vegetarian foods. You saw this wonderful picture the other day. These foodstuffs are actually in the mode of ignorance, tamoguna. And in between this are other foods which are very spicy, etc., which could be vegetarian also, but very spicy and oily and such like rich foods. That is foods in rajaguna, the mode of passion. But here is prasad, prasad of Lord Krishna. This is transcendental, spiritual. So Krishna prasad is ever fresh. So in this way we can understand that the three modes, everything in this world can actually be described in terms of these three modes, sattvaguna, rajaguna, tamaguna. And what are the effects that we have? Sattvaguna, here is a person you can understand by his nature, his characteristics. He looks serene, looks calm, peaceful. He is engaged in the cultivation of knowledge. Because one of the characteristics of sattvaguna is that knowledge illumines the gates of the body. There is happiness, there is contentment in that knowledge. There is peacefulness. And therefore he remains satisfied in his particular conditions. He doesn't perform sinful activities. He leads a pious life. As opposed to that, you have person, rajaguna. Money is honey. Always running after more and more, 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 more. No limit to their greed. And therefore they will snatch from each other, fight with each other, compete with each other for the limited resources of material nature. Always eager for more and more and more. No limit. And still they are not satisfied. They want to enjoy this material world to the fullest. And then you have seen this slide the other day. This is the mode of ignorance. So by these activities you can imagine what will be their destination. It leads to some kind of foolishness, madness, and the next birth is the animal kingdom or the hellish planets. Whereas for those who are in rajaguna, they may get born amongst worldly people, but if they also are very sinful, they will also suffer. So in this way, all of us here in this world are puppets. We are puppets in the hands of the three modes of material nature. Whether one is tied by the rope of sattvaguna, or by rajaguna, or by tamaguna, one is tied. Sattvaguna is compared to a golden rope or a chain of gold that is binding our hands and feet within the jail. Rajaguna is like a chain of silver that is binding our hands and feet in the jail. And tamaguna is like a chain of iron that is binding us. Now, the point is that all three are in the jail. If the person who is bound in the golden chains, if he tells the other two, just see, I am much better off than you. My chains are pure gold and you have only silver. And the one with the silver says, just see, my chain is made of silver and yours is just iron. So is this not something that is foolish? Why so? Because regardless of whether they have golden, iron or silver chains, they are all bound. They are all prisoners within the jail. So similarly, one who is in sattvaguna, rajaguna, tamaguna, all are bound. Because one cannot maintain one's sattva guna purely here in this world. So powerful is the effect of rajaguna and tamaguna. One gets degraded. That is a natural condition here. One is pushed towards the lower modes of nature, rajaguna and tamaguna. Therefore, it is only in good company, in very, very spiritual company, that actually we can transcend or go beyond these three modes. To begin with, we have to situate ourselves in the sattva guna, at least. And then from there, we go beyond. But these three gunas, sattva, rajas and tamas, you can see the two hands there. Somebody is controlling, isn't it? So we have the three modes of material nature represented by these three ladies here. They are pulling the strings. And we are all puppets. And we are under the combination of some of these modes. But, can you put the slide down a little bit, please? But who is controlling the three modes? The three modes are in turn being controlled by the Supreme Lord, who is the master of Prakriti. That is Lord Krishna. Lord Krishna is there in his own abode. And while there, he controls his material energy, which comprises these three gunas. And it is the three gunas under the influence of which every living entity is made to work hard, day and night. Prakriti sthani karshati. But Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is beyond all this. He is the creator of the three gunas of Prakriti. He can never come under the clutches of Prakriti. Tribhir gunamayir bhavir ebhi sarvamidam jagat mohitam nabhijanati mam ebhyah param avyayam. Lord Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita, Tribhir gunamayir bhavir, that these three gunas, they rule the whole world. Ebhi sarvam idam jagat, that this whole jagat or this world is under the grip of these three modes of nature. But there are some people who think me to be under the grip of these three modes. But the fact is that they think so because they are under the grip of the three modes of material nature. Actually, mam ebhyah param avyayam. They do not know what my position is, Krishna says. My position is that I am param. I am supreme, I am transcendental, I am beyond the modes, I am avyaya, I am imperishable. I am situated on the transcendental or spiritual platform. And I can never be controlled by these three modes. Rather, these three modes are always under my control. So therefore, the real process for freedom is to surrender to this Lord Krishna, who is the Supreme Lord and the Master of the Gunas. And in this way, we can become free. Therefore, Krishna describes in the Gita, Daivihi esha gunamayi mama maya turatyaya mam eva yaprapadyante mayam etam tarantite. Lord Krishna says, Daivihi esha gunamayi, that this gunamayi prakriti is my divine energy. Daivihi esha gunamayi mama maya, it is my maya shakti. So it is under my control. Duratyaya. Duratyaya means it is very, very difficult to control or to cross over. But he says, mam eva ye prapadyante. But those who surrender to me, mayam etam tarantite. Taranti means to cross over. They can easily cross over. So everyone in this creation is under the tight grip of the three modes of prakriti, sattva, raja and tamaguna. But these gunas are being controlled by Krishna. So Krishna says, although by one's individual effort it is impossible to cross over these three gunas, but if one surrenders to me, O Arjuna, it is easily possible. So here is a formula for us to get released from the bondage of this material world. All we have to do is to surrender to Lord Krishna. So having discussed Prakriti, now we come across another important concept, that is time. Because Prakriti and Kal, they operate together. Krishna, he says, Kalaha, aham evakshaya kalo. I am inexhaustible time. He describes in the 10th chapter. Time I am. So time is a Shakti of the Lord. It acts in this world. It moves everything around from past to present to future. The Atmas who perform activities here, karma, do so under the influence of Prakriti, under the jurisdiction of Prakriti and Kal. So what is karma? We discussed karma yesterday. But karma is nothing but the activities performed under a span of time, under the control of the three gunas of Prakriti. So Kal and Prakriti always act together. And the influence of Kal is that it always creates change, transformation. It creates birth, then there is growth, then there is maturity, then there is production of byproducts, then there is decay, old, that is old age, and finally there is death. This is how time acts in this world to make everything transform. 6 stages of transformation are there. And time acts unavoidably in this world. There are many, many great subduers. There are many great conquerors in this world, very powerful people. Many people may say, I am the greatest. But eventually, there is always something that is greater than the greatest. And that is time. Kalosmi lokakshaya pravriddhaha. I am time, my dear Arjuna, and I have come here to destroy everything. So time is the ultimate subduer, the ultimate conqueror, the ultimate destroyer of everything. That very man who was so proudly boasting that he is the greatest, that nothing is greater than him, time has conquered him. And today, he is suffering, he cannot even walk, he cannot even move properly because he is plagued by Parkinson's disease. So out of ignorance, out of pride, out of foolishness, living entities make foolish claims like this, little realizing that their pride is going to be crushed by this Kala Chakra. However powerful a king or a wrestler or army one may be, time eventually will crush everything in this world. No one can defeat time, because time is a Lord's energy acting in this world. So therefore, we should have due respect for time, because we see it as Krishna's energy. We should always make good use of our time. We should not waste time. Time in the human form of life is specifically meant just for serving the Supreme Lord Krishna. Therefore, we should try to use it very, very nicely. Let us see how the division of time takes place according to Bhagavad Gita and the other Shastras. How the time is divided as per the universal scales. In the Srimad Bhagavat, actually, there is a division of time starting from subatomic time right up to the span of the whole universe. So much information is given in our Shastra. But let us only discuss the bigger divisions of time. We are presently living in Kali Yuga. This age is called Kali Yuga. And the time span is 4.32 lakh, 4,32,000 years. Before that is Dwapar Yuga, which is twice that. And therefore, 8,64,000 years. Before that is Treta Yuga, which is 3 times Kali Yuga, which is 12,96,000 years. And finally, there is Satya Yuga, which is 4 times Kali Yuga. And that is 17,28,000 years. Together, these 4 yugas form 1 Chatur Yuga, which is 43,20,000 years. And these 4 yugas repeat. Satya Treta Dwapar Kali, Satya Treta Dwapar Kali. They go on repeating like this. So we have finished Satya Treta Dwapar, now we are in Kali. We have finished only 5,000 years of Kali Yuga. Another 4,27,000 years are still remaining. Although there are some people who claim that Kali Yuga is about to end, it is not at all true. The Shastras say that there is long time left. And when this Kali Yuga becomes over, the Lord will come as Kalki, because people would have become so sinful by that time that He will have to come and destroy everything and clean up the whole earth for the next new Yuga, the virtuous age called Satya Yuga, to begin. In Satya Yuga, everything is virtuous, religious, pure. People are very peaceful, intelligent. They live together very lovingly. They have very sharp minds and intelligence. They are very beautiful. Everything is going very nicely. They are very strong also. Morality is very high. But all these good qualities start diminishing with time. Treta, Dwapar, Kali. And it reaches its worst situation in Kali Yuga. And we are only in the beginning of Kali Yuga. So you can imagine what will happen towards the end of Kali Yuga. How bad things will become. So in any case, these four yugas will go on repeating. When these Chatur Yugas repeat 1,000 times, that means Satya Treta Dwapar Kali, Satya Treta Dwapar Kali goes on 1,000 times, it is only 12 hours of Brahma. Double that, it is 24 hours of Brahma. That means one complete day and night of Brahma, who is sitting in Brahma Loka. This is relativity of time. We discussed that on the first day. How the Shastras discuss how time scales in different parts of the universe are different. So Brahmaji is one day night, day and night is 864 crore years of our earth. And then one full day of Brahma being 864 crore years, Brahma has 360 days in his year. So you can calculate how much is one year of Brahma. And Brahma lives for 100 years of his years. So that is, you can see the figure here, that is one lifetime of Brahma. That is 311 trillion 40 million years. And that is the lifespan of the universe. And that is one breath of Mahavishnu. So how does it sound? Mind-boggling? Yes. This is the nature of God's creation. So let anybody who claims to be God think several times before he can make such statements. So therefore, one should just surrender to that person who is the Lord of time, who is the Lord of Prakriti, who is our ultimate destination. By surrendering to Him, by serving Him, by loving Him, we can attain the perfection of life and go back beyond this Kaal, beyond this Prakriti, beyond this universes, back to the spiritual world, the kingdom of God, which is our real home. So let us begin our journey back home, back to Godhead. So we should chant, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Thank you very much. Today we are stopping early so we can have time for questions. Can we switch on the lights?
Well, that Vishnu, when he takes a brief, the entire universe is destroyed. See, I would like to know what is the role of Pralayakari, Shankar, in that. Because as it is that which goes back into Vishnu, now what is the role of Shankar in Praja Pralay?
Now, when we spoke of the inhalation and exhalation of the breath, we were speaking about Mahavishnu. That is, at the higher level, when all the universes come within, into him. When he breathes out, all the universes go out. But Lord Shiva's role, Shankar's role, is within each universe. For the destruction of the planets within the universe. Mahavishnu's role is for the entirety of all the universes that merge into him. But in each of the universes, there is a Shankar, there is Lord Shiva. He is not alone though, all the Rudras come into play. An expansion of the Lord, of Lord Anantashesh called Sankarshan, he plays a very important role here. But we will not get into all these details. So suffice it to say that Lord Shiva's role is within the universe. Alright? At the time of destruction. Any other questions?
Actually, time of Satyuga was virtuous, religious, and God himself was present. But why there were demonic activities there and so many asuras were also there in that? As like even in Dwapar.
Actually, it is not that there were so many. There were very few. But those few that were there were really powerful. They were really great asuras, great rakshasas. Today, we have many, many asuras and many, many rakshasas, but all teeny-weeny rakshasas. All ordinary, every second person on the street is like an asura or rakshasa. People are losing their devotional qualities. So in Kali Yuga, you will find a large number of them. In Satyuga, it is not that these asuras do not exist. They are there, but in small numbers. Any other question? Hare Krishna.
According to Srimad Bhagavatam, yeah, in the fourth or fifth canto, it is stated that the distance of moon is higher than the sun. And during the solar eclipse, the planet Rahu comes in between the sun. Hmm. So at that time, where the moon goes actually?
Well, these are questions that cannot be discussed in detail in such a small time interval. But suffice it to say that these are questions of perspective. We have to study with reference to the whole universal model. But it is just that the pathways to reach there are of different dimensions. Therefore, for example, suppose the house next door is just here, as the crow flies. But to reach there, I have to go all the way around and then go there. So although the house is close, but if I have to go there, then it is very far. So in the same way, there are many aspects of the structure of the universe which will need very elaborate discussion into which we cannot go today because of so many constraints. The idea of giving today the outline was just to have an introduction, just to have an overall picture. These are ideas which are presented not only in the Srimad Bhagavatam but also in the other Puranas with the idea that we understand how magnificent is the Lord's creation here and that we should not try to understand the creation of the universe or the structure of the universe with reference to what our senses perceive. We are trying to understand what is far, what is near, what is here and what is there simply on the basis of our eyes and the extensions of our eyes like the telescopes. But these are giving us faulty information. So even though from the point of view of our experience in this world, it may not sometimes tally, we should have faith in the version of the scriptures. Because the arrangement of the universe also is so complex that no amount of scientific experimentation is ever going to be able to make us understand this complexity. So better we just simply accept. That is the reason we spent a lot of time on the first day discussing the importance of Shabda Praman as to why we need to accept things. Because these things are beyond the capacity of our senses to perceive. And therefore we save time, convenience. We take the easy way out by accepting the verdict of the Shastra.
Hare Krishna Prabhuji.
Yes.
Prabhuji, you stated a statement that every atom or
yes,
every organism is actually bound by the God himself. That is the photo which was which had come on the screen. So now scientists, they are capable of destroying an atom, suppose in a nuclear fusion reaction. Then does that mean that the scientists are able to overcome the force which is put by the Lord Krishna between the atoms so that they are combined together?
Not necessarily. Just like the Lord is also in our heart. He is within this body. But surely somebody can come and kill me and destroy my body, isn't it? That doesn't mean that that person is more powerful than the Lord within. The Lord is simply there to sustain everything. He is the underlying basis of everything, be it the atom or be it the individual living entity or be it the universe. So He is the basis. But the individuals in this world will try to, according to their mentality, try to do so many activities of construction, destruction. So the Lord is untouched by these things. Okay. Can you switch on the mic? It's in the middle.
It's there to be perfect. But
yes.
We know that the evolution of creatures takes place with time. Like we know that previously there used to exist a dinosaurs which evolved into reptiles like lizards and all. So if God is perfect, why can't He make perfect creatures which do not have to evolve with time?
Did you attend the session when we discussed evolution on 2 days?
Yes.
And we mentioned also that from the Shastric point of view, we do not accept this theory of evolution where the body itself or the species is supposed to evolve. We accept from the Shastras that all species were created by God and they are all coexisting, maybe not all together in one planet, maybe spread out and distributed in different planets in the universe, but all species are there. And these species don't evolve. The bodies don't change. In the sense of, as Darwin understood it, that the reptiles become mammals, the mammals become apes, the apes become human beings. Not like that. There were apes also, and there were humans also at that time, just as there are apes and humans today also. The ape has not evolved into the human. It is a soul that goes from different bodies. So therefore, we emphasized yesterday the talk of how the soul is evolving from body to body, body to body, species to species. It is not that the body or the species is evolving. Right? Some written questions are here, which I will... I read in one magazine, this is the question here, that according to one scientist, the existence of God is 67%. That means that the probability that God exists is 67%. That is what that mathematician has shown. What do you infer for this? I think he is 67% intelligent. The day he understands that the probability for God existing is 100%, then we will say he is 100% intelligent. What is Vedic mathematics? You are asking a question which is not possible to answer here. It is a whole branch of mathematics, but I am not a mathematician. You say everything originates from Mahavishnu, then why don't we worship Mahavishnu instead of Krishna? The answer is that even Mahavishnu comes from Krishna. That is why. Krishna is a source of even Mahavishnu. And not even directly, through many via media. Krishna, from Krishna comes Balaram, from Balaram comes Sankarshan, Pradyumna, Vasudeva, Aniruddha, again Sankarshan, there's a whole sequence like this. And then comes Mahavishnu. So ultimately the origin of all is Govindam Adipurusham. He is the Adipurusha, Govinda, Lord Krishna. Accepting Bhakti Marg, one can become free from all his earlier sins. Then is the same also possible through prayaschitta, offering homas? By prayaschitta marga of performing so many homas in the karmakanda process, one may be able to successfully counteract sinful reactions, but one cannot counteract the propensity to commit sin. By bhakti, however, not only are the sins destroyed, but even the very propensity to commit sin is destroyed. Therefore, definitely we should all take to the bhakti marg. Person who eats meat comes under ignorance. So if a person eats an egg, will he or she be also considered under ignorance? That is also a tamasic food by all means. Next question is, what about yesterday's questions? Yes, it is all here. I will deal with them. Aim is to go back to Godhead, and if all people go to Godhead, who will be left in this universe? Very wonderful. I hope that day will come. Wouldn't you like it if there is nobody left in Hindalga jail? Wouldn't it be very nice that all the people in Belgaum are very law-abiding and very living together very nicely? It's very wonderful. If all the living beings in this universe become Krishna conscious and go back to the spiritual world, nothing like it. The best thing that can happen. But tell me, do you think that the Hindalga jail will ever be empty? What do you think? Although we would like it to be so, but practically we know that it is not going to happen. In the same way, we would like this universe to be empty and all the living entities to go back to the spiritual world. But we know it will not happen. Because there will always be many living entities who will be rebellious to the will of God and who will try to stay here in the cycle of birth and death. Next question is, how and why does the soul become attached to the body in the state of coma? The soul is still present there. Whether in a state of coma or whether in some other state, it doesn't really matter so much. Because this is only a matter of the external consciousness. It is described in the Shastras that there are very various stages in which the Atma reflects its consciousness through the body. One is called Jagrati, the state of wakefulness, where we are all now awake. So we are in state of Jagrati. There is state of Swapna, dream state, which is in between sleep and wakefulness. And the third state is Sushupti, deep sleep. And one will move between these three states normally. From Jagrati through Swapna, Sushupti, again back to Jagrati, and this goes on. So coma also is Sushupti. So are we not conscious? Is there not consciousness in the body when we are sleeping? Of course, you may not call it medical unconsciousness. That is a different term. But we are conscious, the Atma is still there in the body. The organs of the body are still functioning when we are asleep. And that is why we are able to wake up and be hale and hearty and continue our activities from where we left off earlier. So same way from coma, if the Atma continues to remain in the body, if the body is still a fit place of residence for the Atma, then he will come out of the coma and be healthy again. But somehow if the body is too weak or too defective, and the Atma cannot stay there anymore, then from that state of coma itself, that person will die. That means the soul will leave the body. So these are some of the questions from yesterday that were left over. You say that we have to follow the akarma path. I am a housewife. What is my akarma path? So please come day after tomorrow. That whole day, that whole evening is meant for practical application of Bhagavad Gita. So we'll be talking of how not only a housewife, but also a professional, a retired person, a student, or anyone can actually practice in his or her personal life. The question is, sometimes a doctor advises eating meat, fish, or eggs to improve the health of patients. Does the doctor get sinful reaction for this? Should I tell the truth? What is the truth? Yes. There is no need for eating meat. There is enough substitutes available in nature for proteins, for vitamins, for everything. Very nice substitutes are available. And any good dietitian will give you very nice substitutes. So it is not necessary for these things to be done. And in any case, medical science is also discovering that meat is not really so beneficial after all. Red meat is known to be causing cancer. So many other problems are there. We will discuss a little more of this day after tomorrow. Substance of this body, of this question is, that in the early days, man was not so civilized, he was exposing the body. Then he was covering. Now again it has become common to expose the body. So how is it wrong to expose? It is not that in the early days man was exposing the body. It is a myth. Man was very civilized earlier. More civilized than he is today. Today we think we are civilized, but actually we are not civilized. Dvipada Pashu, as we discussed on the first day. What is wrong in exposing the body? The human body is different from animals. The human body is endowed with superior intelligence. Therefore, there is something called do's and don'ts to make him go to a higher spiritual level of consciousness, to lift him beyond animalistic pursuits. In the animal and bird life, there is no morality, there is no ethics, there are no rules and regulations for them, there is no sin for them. But for human beings, because it is a junction from which we can either get degraded or get elevated, there is a question of morality, there is a question of do's and don'ts. So he must rise beyond the stage of animals and come to a more refined platform that is beyond the body, that is on the spiritual platform. Therefore, engaging in animalistic practices will only degrade one's consciousness, not raise one's consciousness. Sum and substance of this next question is that if God is all powerful, why doesn't he provide us with evidence to guide us towards the good? Well, last 5 days you have just seen that evidence. That is Shabda Praman. Along with that, so much logic was provided. So evidence is there. It is for the person to accept that evidence. If we accept the evidence that Lord Krishna is giving us, very easily we can make our life perfect. Body is a garment. Is there any scheme to buy one or take one? Yes, that is your karma, as we discussed. The karma you perform is the price with which you purchase your next body. Understand, right? The soul and the ghost. The ghost, as we discussed yesterday, the subtle body, it doesn't have a gross body. If the sinful acts done by the person are stored, then where actually is it stored? Whether in his own body or outside? The impressions of sinful activity and propensities are stored in the subtle body, in the mind. And that causes his inclination to sin when he gets the next gross body. The tendency to commit sin or be of a certain nature is there from childhood. Duryodhan, for example, was wicked from childhood only. He didn't have to associate with wicked people to become wicked, because he was carrying his samskar from previous life in the subtle body. Some people are born saintly, some people are born wicked, because they're carrying the samskars of the previous life, the impressions on the subtle body. However, by good association, these samskars can be improved. How should we students maintain a perfect balance between our practical life and spiritual life along with worldly attractions? Number one, by following the do's and don'ts that we will mention day after tomorrow. This will question will be better answered day after tomorrow. So if you attend, then perhaps your question will be answered. If it is still not answered, then please ask this day after tomorrow. What happens after coming out from the cycle of birth and death? Very important question. Suppose you are in engineering college or a medical college. What happens when you pass out of the engineering or medical college? What happens? Then your real work begins, isn't it? As an engineering student or a medical student, you are only training, you are preparing to be an engineer or a doctor. But it is only when you have passed out that you will actually start your real business. Similarly, we are here in this material world preparing for the spiritual world. Once we reach the spiritual world, then our real business actually starts. To associate with Lord Krishna in the spiritual world and engage in his wonderful, eternal, joyful pastimes along with his other devotees. Endless pastimes are going on from time immemorial in the spiritual world, eternally going on. These are called lilas. To participate in the sports of the Supreme Lord. is our eternal activity that we will do when we go back to the spiritual world. God has created us all, but then why is He forcing us to return to Him in the spiritual world? No, God is not forcing, neither God has forced us to come here into this material world from the spiritual world, neither is He going to force us to go from here back to the spiritual world. God is always valuing our free will, our independence. It is up to us to use our free will rightly, understand what is for our good, and then take to the spiritual path to Godhead, because that is the only path for happiness. Please differentiate between the mind and soul. As we have seen, the mind is a part of a subtle body. It is material. It is part of the sukshma deha. The five elements of the gross body and the three elements of the subtle body, you will remember. And the mind is a part of the subtle body. It is a vehicle for the soul to go to the next body, but it is not spiritual. Whereas the soul is a real person, the real you and me, which is spiritual. Microorganisms, ants, insects, etc. are killed by us. What karmic reaction is in store? Definitely some karmic reaction is there. If we surrender to Krishna, however, as we discussed yesterday, then Krishna protects us from all the sinful reactions. People get killed, say in a vehicle accident, vehicle driven by us. Who is made to suffer? The person who dies or the driver of the vehicle? Accidental death means there is also karma involved for the person who has died. That means he was destined to die in that particular way, through an accident. And somehow or other, by our karma, we have been made the instrument to be the reason for that person's death, to have his karma delivered to him. And that karma will probably be that we will be harassed by the police, or we will have to do so many anxieties in the courts and so on. That is a punishment worse than hell itself nowadays. One doesn't have to go to hellish planets. Nowadays, if you have to go to the hell, to the courts, and you have to take movements of the government offices, etc., that itself is a big thing nowadays. So then that's also part of our karma, that such a thing was to happen. As a single person, how can he judge every soul? Because there are so many souls in the universe. Yamaraj